So the translation by Srila Prabhupada. O best among the descendants of Bharata, Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. So the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord, because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. Whenever, therefore, a show is made to teach the devotee, in the case of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, it is for teaching the less intelligent men. A devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma Dev to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. The poor subjects were without protection due to the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were awaiting the assumption of power by Maharaj Yudhisthira. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favors from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. Om Gyana Timidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyachade Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So just repeat the translation. O best among the descendants of Bharat, Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now appointed administrative head, and my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are rendered helpless. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and seeking the blessings from all the devotees, especially many of the senior devotees that are here. There's once actually, so Srila Prabhupada, he was once on a plane. Next to him was Shyamasundara Prabhu, and next to him was Shruta Kirti Prabhu. And then what happened is the air hostess, she was coming down, she was offering beverages to everyone. And then the devotees saw 7-Up. And the devotees wanted 7-Up. But Prabhupada had never seen what 7-Up is. So then they offered it to him. They told him the ingredients in it. And he said, okay, yeah, this is good. So they had a couple of 7-Ups in the flight. Then later on, they didn't really tell anyone. But then later on, the word got out somehow. And then they were in LA. And again, Prabhupada had like half a can of 7-Up in a car. And he gave the rest to his disciples, said, you can finish this. So it's like the nice maha, isn't it? So anyway, the disciples, again, they didn't try to tell anyone, but the word got out and everyone was hearing that actually 7-Up, this is like bona fide, this is the thing, you know, let's all have it. So then at one point, Prabhupada, when he was in US, he said, actually, we shouldn't be having 7-Up so much. And then he flew to India. And then as he came out of his room in Juhu, in a flat in Juhu, he looked at the stairway and there was just stacks and stacks and stacks of 7-Up and Limca and all these bottles. And then Prabhupada said, this is terrible. And then he really disapproved of it. But he was explaining to them then that actually he was himself having it because he had some digestive kind of problems. So he said this is why it helped. So the point being that actually, when we look at something in Prabhupada's life, in scriptures, in the Mahabharata, there always needs to have some context to the whole situation that's going on. Otherwise, to take just like a little snapshot of the Mahabharata, just to take, okay, one incident that happened, then it's very difficult to see how the progression is happening through the whole epic that Krishna's arranging. So the same thing here, that when we read Shastra, when you see this instance, you know, to a layman, it may seem a bit morbid. Like, you know, there's like a dying man here. He's saying a few words about leadership, rulership, to the Pandavas, to many great sages who are just standing around him. And therefore, they're thinking like, you know, how is this like something divine, many people think. But you see that this topic of death is very much spoken about in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like, the start of it begins by so many people in the battlefield dying. The start of the Bhagavatam begins when Maharaj Parikshit is cursed to die. The end of it is, the end of Srimad Bhagavatam is where the death of humanity, the death of any civilization in Kali Yuga is talked about. And then ultimately Maharaj Parikshit meets his death. And then the middle is talking about how many glorious devotees die, their mood, their attributes, the time of their passing away. And we even hear of Krishna himself and how he leaves the planet. So when you look at the Bhagavatam, you see there's death, 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 death. So many deaths are happening. And therefore, once the devotees, what they ask Prabhupada, like, what does philosophy actually mean? What does it mean to have philosophy? And Prabhupada said to them that philosophy means that you keep death in front of your eyes. That you can actually see that it's going to happen any moment, that you can, you know, perfect your life and perfect your death. So therefore, like, sometimes as devotees, it's easy to kind of be in the process, be in association, and forget about death, isn't it? It's like, it doesn't become such a big issue. Like, you forget about hunger sometimes when you're serving, and then it comes back very severely. But also death, it also, we kind of forget, like, the daunting aspect that a materialist sees it from. So I remember once, like, a couple of years ago, I was on book distribution, and one individual, he came up to me, he approached me, and that means one of two things, like, either they're really enthusiastic, or they're going to challenge you. So I was like, okay, what's going to happen here? Anyway, he started asking, what are you doing? So I told him we're monks, etc., giving out these spiritual literatures. And then he said, the one thing I don't like about religious or spiritual people is that you don't actually, like, you're not scared of death. It's like, that's just weird. Like, how can someone not be scared of death? So anyway, we're talking a bit. And then he said, if I, like, walk down the street with you guys, if I joined you guys, and I walked down the street, and I fell over, then all you guys are going to be doing is praying for me. Because you're not going to call 999, are you? You're just going to pray for me. So then I said to him, anyway, we started talking a bit more. And then I said to him, don't worry. Look, you don't have to sign on the dotted line. I've memorized the number you just said, 999. If anything happens, I'll call them. You'll be all right. And worst comes to worst, you have some people praying around you in case the ambulance is late. So anyway, he appreciated that and took a book. And then I realized, like, I was saying all this stuff about death, and Krishna, he'll always teach you stuff, and then he'll make you internalize it. He'll teach you the philosophy, he'll teach you the appreciation of association, all these aspects he'll teach you, and then he'll make you internalize it deeply. So then, this is a couple of years later, a few weeks ago, I was in the middle of a room with two very senior devotees that were sitting there, and I was trying to get out of the room, actually, but I couldn't get out of the room. And then they started talking about death. These two devotees started talking about death. And one very senior devotee asked the other, like, have you thought about death? What's your feelings towards death? And the other devotee started saying that, actually, I've contemplated it many times. I realize that this body is like a vehicle, and at certain periods in my life, it's broken down, it needs repairs. You know, he gave various different like examples in his own life. And then this very senior devotee turned towards me and said, he's not just saying it like as if it's like a preaching opportunity. He's not just saying it like he wants to impress me or give some analogy on things. He said he's really actually realized this. This is deeply internalized in this person. And then he also himself, he revealed that actually he's not scared of death either. But his mind was more worrying about the lead up to death, the suffering that leads to death. You know, will I be in a condition where there's needles in me? All these kind of things. So then again, I was in this room and I was thinking, oh my God, now I'm surrounded by people who aren't scared of death, but I'm scared of death now. And then Krishna showed me the reality of everything that's going on. But here through the Bhagavatam again and again that actually devotees are glorified because of so many attributes that they have in their life and so many ways that they leave their life as well. So here in the Bhagavatam, we're at a section where it's showing the real glory of Bhishma Dev, actually. The real amazing nature of Bhishma Dev, and it's showing this conversation between him and Yudhisthira Maharaj, which is a very unique and it's a very extraordinary conversation. There's nothing actually mundane, nothing ordinary about what they're saying to each other. And you can see this from many levels. Like on one level, Krishna's arranged this for Yudhisthira Maharaj. He knows that he's upset after the battlefield, after so many people dying, and he's taking it as his responsibility. So Bhishma Dev comes and pacifies him. Another way of looking at it is that Bhishma Dev's brought him up. He's doing his final responsibilities that he showed him how to live. He showed him how to rule. He showed him how to be a valiant warrior. All of these aspects, and now he's showing him how to leave the world as well. But this is a very unique conversation because you see that whilst the battlefield, whilst the whole Kurukshetra war is going on, you see at the start of it, Yudhisthira Maharaj knows the caliber of these personalities. He knows the caliber of Bhishma Dev, he knows the caliber of Dronacharya, Kripacharya, all these personalities, and therefore he knows that actually, I will never be able to take these people down. Our side will not be able to defeat or stop these personalities unless we know from themselves how to take them down. So then at the start of the battle, before everything begins, he himself with the Pandavas, they go, they take the blessings from these devotees. And then at that point, he also asks these devotees, he asks Bhishma Dev, he asks Dronacharya, all of them, how can we stop you from fighting? How can we defeat you in the war? And Bhishma Dev, he doesn't answer it. He says, when the right time comes, I will tell you. When the time comes, at the proper time, I will tell you at that point. So then, you know, as the battle is going on, at one point then we hear where Krishna, he then himself has to come off the chariot. He's then racing towards Bhishma Dev with the wheel on top of his head. Ready to take him down. And at that point, it said that Bhishma Dev was in like the ultimate ecstasy, the most ecstasy he's ever, you know, he's been waiting his whole life for this one moment. So it's very unique to hear about this, and we'll talk why later. But you see, at that point, then Arjuna says to Krishna, don't worry, like, I will take Bhishma Dev down. Like, you come back, leave it, I'll take him down. And then Krishna's saying to him, look, I've said to you twice already, like, take Bhishma Dev down. You keep, like, you know, whenever you're in front of Bhishma Dev, you fight, you know, substandardly. You're not taking him down. So now I have to do it. And he said, no, 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 tomorrow I'll take him down. And then when they're on the way to their camp after the battle, after that day of battle has finished, then Arjuna then says to Krishna, how can I kill and take down Bhishma Dev? So he just said, I'll take him down. And Krishna comes back. And then now he says, how can I take him down? How can I kill him? So then at that point, Yudhisthira Maharaj remembers that actually at the start of the battle, we said to Bhishma Dev, how do we defeat you? And he said, come to me at the right time. And then he knows that, okay, this is the right time. We must go to him. And so then they go to his camp. They ask him, how do we stop you from fighting? You're taking down our men left, right, and center. Like, you know, we're going to be finished soon. So then at that point, Bhishma Dev, he then explains to them very in great detail, actually, that he's taken a vow, actually, that he won't fight against any women, and he won't fight against anyone that was in their previous life also a woman. And then he explains that to him, Shikhandi is a female, because he remembers that was Amba. And to everyone else, Shikhandi is a male. So then he says, wherever that Shikhandi is fighting me, from that direction, I will not respond to anything. So if anyone even throws any arrows from there, I won't respond to it, because it's from the direction that she's standing. So he says explicitly exactly how to take him down to Yudhisthira Maharaj. And therefore, at the end of this, we see that Yudhisthira Maharaj, he's not only feeling responsible for the whole battlefield of Kurukshetra, but he's also feeling very responsible for what's happened to Bhishma Dev in this situation that we're hearing about now. And therefore, he can't be pacified by anyone but Bhishma Dev because of what he feels like he's done to him. So this conversation, we see that is very like, there's nothing ordinary about it, because in one sense, you see all of these different dynamics of their relationship. You'll never see such respect, such relationships in any sort of material sphere. No way would someone tell anyone else how to kill them, how to defeat them. No way would they tell anyone else, like, whilst they're on their deathbed, they wouldn't hold any sort of resent against them and just tell them purely how to lead and do everything righteously. So we see that here, and we see this not being an ordinary conversation also, because all of these great sages, all of these different Mahajans have also come, you know, Shukadev Goswami, Vyasadev, all these great personalities have come to hear these last words from Bhishma Dev. And you see that this is what would happen in previous days, that all the sages, they'll go different places, and from within they would know exactly where to go to hear Krishna Katha. And then you see the modern day sages that we have in ISKCON. You see Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you see them, they went to all the places where Krishna Katha wasn't, where completely the opposite was happening, if anything. And there they made people attracted to Krishna Katha. There they made everything happen. So here we see that actually, we see that everyone's arranged and everyone's here. And so many people actually ask, like, how do you see that Bhishma Dev through his whole life was a Mahajan? Like, there's many aspects of the Mahabharata, people question different personalities. You know, they question Bhishma Dev, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Bhim, Arjun, all these personalities. Every single personality in the Mahabharata is questioned at some point or another. But then you have to see the whole thread of what Krishna is trying to do. The whole kind of story of what he's leading up to. Once the whole context is taken into consideration, then you can see the divinity and the actual arrangement of what Krishna is doing. So here we see that actually the Mahajans, they have a very unique kind of situation. That actually, it's not just their ability that they can uphold Dharma. It's not just their ability to, you know, give the rules, the regulations, all of these kind of things. But actually, these Mahajans, you see that actually through the examples, through their teachings, that they're all exemplifying a deep level of surrender on some form or another. A deep level of surrender that affects and that can actually be imparted onto all of us. So you see with them, they give these teachings to their successors, to their juniors. And through their conversations with their juniors, they're imparting these transcendental knowledge which has the seed of bhakti in it. So everything that they're doing is basically leading up to giving this seed of bhakti onwards and onwards and onwards. And that's why all these sages have now assembled at this place, ready to hear from Bhishma Dev. As he's sitting there, he's talking to Yudhisthira Maharaj about, you know, the Varnashram system. He's talking to him about how to rule. He's talking to him, and then he starts remembering Krishna at Partha Sharati. And then he becomes completely inundated, and we see his ultimate glory. Whereas many times people question him, because It's very like his relationship with Krishna is very unique. Like, it's very difficult to understand, like, what's his relationship with Krishna. Like, you see Kunti Devi, and she's got a relationship, you know, there's some aspect of her being an aunt, but she's also got aspects of knowing that Krishna's God. She's got some awe and reverence there as well. She knows his greatness, etc., like that. You see the Pandavas, you see that they're, like, out of friendship, they accept Krishna, they accept his guidance, they accept his will, etc., like that. The Kauravas, you see the opposite. That, like, you know, they have all the signs that Krishna is God. They have all, like, the same universal form that Arjuna sees, Duryodhana sees. All these kind of abilities and signs that Krishna shows them. And then they're just like, okay, Krishna, you're like a great mystic. You know, good magic trick. Show us the next one now. What do we, you know, what else do you have in store? So their side is more seen going against the signs of God. They never took them on board. But here we see that Bhishma Dev, very uniquely, he himself, we hear about his pure love, we hear about his devotion to Krishna, him accepting Krishna as God. But then we see that actually he's fighting against him and acting like an enemy. We see that he's shooting arrows against him. We see that, you know, he's making Krishna's body, obviously it's transcendental, but he's getting a kick out of it, bleeding. So then you think, like, how is this a Mahajan? Like, you know, how am I meant to follow this person's example? Like, am I also meant to make Krishna bleed? Am I meant to fight against the deity? What am I meant to do, you know? So how am I meant to take something away from here? So actually, on so many levels you can question him. You can think, like, even when he went on the battle, like, he could have just said, like, okay, I've taken this vow against Hastinapur, but forget it. You know, I'm not going to show in a dharmic way. You know, the Kauravas, Shakuni, he's like a complete low-class gambler. You see Duryodhan, complete cheat. The other side, there's Dharmaraj, there's Krishna's best friend, Arjuna. So why not just switch sides? Why not switch sides at that point? So the actual first line of this purport, Prabhupada basically explains a lot of what's going on in the Mahabharata and how to take everything into context. He says, the popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotees have nothing to learn, The devotee does not have anything new to learn from the Lord, because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. So here it's explained actually that Krishna ultimately wanted to show every single person in the future exactly what would happen to a person, even if they're the greatest, even if they're the most powerful, even if they have strength, even if they have valor, even if they have so much righteousness and scriptural knowledge, but if they're not on the side of Dharma, they will be conquered. So Bhishma Dev, he was the example of someone that had all of that to the highest degrees. He was unconquerable unless he told the Pandavas exactly how to kill him. He was wiping out thousands and thousands of people every single day. He was known as someone whose word was as good as gold. In all aspects of his life, he was showing things very exemplary. In all aspects of life, we see that actually he sacrificed himself. He always gave up something. And therefore, Krishna was showing that actually he's not on the dharmic side, so he, you know, that side will go down at some point or another. And therefore, just to show the striking lesson to everyone else, he then makes his pure devotee, go in what looks like an impure role in this whole scene. So, it's the awkward part where you have to wait. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Shri Shri Gonitai Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki. So we see that actually through Bhishma Dev, Krishna is showing his own greatness. you can only show your own greatness when someone else, you know, when you can defeat someone else of very high greatness as well. Even once, like this journalist asked Prabhupada, I think they were trying to catch him out. So they said to him, like, is Krishna so great? Is God so great that he can make something that he himself can't lift? So he's kind of got like the contradictory side. If he makes something so great that he can't lift, then he's not so like the greatest. And if he can't, then he's not God because he can't make something that great. So then Prabhupada says to this this person that actually, yeah, he can make something so great that even he himself can't lift. And the person was like, okay, I've caught you now. And then he said, but the next second he'll lift it. So the idea being that Krishna's, he's not just like, you know, this is him and the, you know, Krishna's personality is ever expanding. It's ever like increasing. He always has more and more sweet attributes every single day. There's so many more ways to be attracted to him. So here specifically, through Bhishma Dev, he's showing that actually he's the greatest personality of all. He's the supreme of everywhere. And so many people misunderstand Bhishma Dev. Many people don't understand why he did certain things. But it's described, just like how Prabhupada is describing in this purport, that actually the pure devotee has nothing to learn. And Krishna is guiding them from within. He's teaching them everything from within. But he's using them to show everyone else an example. So it's also described in some of the commentaries that Krishna himself, from within the heart of Yudhisthira, he says to him that you will be on the side of the Kurus. You are going to lose. You're going to be defamed. You're going to be misunderstood. You're going to be humiliated. But through all of this, I want you to take this role because I want to teach the rest of humanity through you. So this is what is showing actually Bhishma Dev's ultimate glory. This is what is showing that actually he's playing a role that Krishna has given to him, and he doesn't care, like, you know, if I'm wrong, who cares? If I get no fame, who cares? If I'm misunderstood for the next millions of years, who cares? Like, as long as Krishna is shown as a glorious personality, as long as people see that he's the best, that he's the greatest, that he's the strongest, I will do it. I will take on the service. Even if someone doesn't understand me. So therefore, he was completely unaffected by all these things like fame, etc. like that. And therefore, in this situation, where he's on his deathbed, where he's given instructions to Yudhisthira Maharaj and the rest of these personalities, now we see his ultimate glory. Now we see exactly what he came to give. And now we see that actually he himself, his mind is completely absorbed. At one point we'll hear that his mind is also very much absorbed on Krishna, and he forgets, he stops all his activities, just focuses his mind on Krishna, and then he also passes away at that glorious moment. But he has no thought about himself. And I was thinking, like, for myself, like, when I'm wrong, like, I want to prove to others that I'm not wrong. Even if I know I'm completely wrong, I'll go out of my way to prove it to others. And even if I'm right and misunderstood, you'll really drill it home. Therefore, when you're right and you're misunderstood and you're perceived that wrong, to then prove yourself, then I was thinking to myself, like, what's the difference really between me and a materialist, isn't it? Like, if my life is just centered around proving myself, then there's no real glory to it. But if my life is centered around, actually, I'm going to serve Krishna, I'm going to serve Prabhupada, if people criticize me, if they, you know, misunderstand me, no matter what, I'm not going to let go of this one thing of serving Srila Prabhupada, then there's a very glorious life. Then there's a lot to be known for, to be heard for, etc. like that. So here we see that actually Bhishma Dev, he himself is showing this to everyone, his ultimate glory through this pastime. And ultimately, he's one aspect of it is also that he comes from a great lineage, actually. And he's upholding, you know, the reputation of that lineage, and he's showing also the younger generations what to do. So we see in his lineage, it begins from the start with Pururava, King Pururava. And then many generations after that, I think it's around 10 generations later, then comes Bharat Maharaj, the famous Bharat Maharaj, the great emperor, which is why India is very famously known as Bharatvarsha. Then many generations after that came Hasti Maharaj, who then built Hastinapur, which is now known as modern-day, close to modern-day Delhi. Later generations, then Maharaj Kuru came, which is why the Kauravas are called the Kurus. After that, then Shantanu Maharaj, and then after that, Bhishma Dev as well. So Bhishma Dev, he's showing all these great teachings to his juniors. He starts off his life by showing them his valiant nature, his ability to be strong, to be a warrior, use weapons, and then he ends his life by showing them his power with scriptures. He shows them his realization based on scriptures here to them. And then at one point he lets go of everything and he just focuses on Krishna's Parthasarathi as that form when he was rushing towards him, that form that gave him the greatest ecstasy in that place. And this is also showing the Pandavas actually how to finish their life as well, how to leave the planet for them. So we see that Yudhisthira Maharaj, as they're walking, one by one the Pandavas are falling down, one by one the Pandavas are leaving their bodies, but he's determined, no, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to focus my mind on Krishna. Then we see also Parikshit Maharaj, so many things going on around him. As soon as the curse comes, he's just thinking, okay, now's a clear-cut sign that I know when I'm going to die, let me just make arrangements, focus on Krishna. There's no kind of like other alternative, no agenda on his mind. He wasn't thinking like, okay, 5 days has gone, now I need a tea break, now I need prasadam, now I need this. He's just absorbed on that Krishna katha. So then he's also showing everyone that actually as time progresses, as the signs come, then also we have to let go of everything. That also we have to put our mind and also absorb it in Krishna. And so the last thing he's doing now is actually eradicating all of these doubts from Yudhisthira Maharaj. Many people also question Yudhisthira Maharaj, isn't it? Like, he's taken out Bhishma Dev, he's taken out millions of personalities on this battle. And then you think, how long did he actually rule for? Anyone knows? How long Yudhisthira Maharaj actually ruled for? Close to that. So 36 years. He just ruled for 36 years. And so you think, like, was it worth it? Was it worth all of that mass massacre that happened, and then you only rule for 36 years? And then even, like, you add Parikshit Maharaj onto that. And Parikshit Maharaj ruled for around 60 years. So in total, it's just under 100 years. Like, all of that happened just for that long. Was it worth it? Yudhisthira Maharaj is famously known. People say that he lied, he did this, he did that. Was it all worth it so that at the end of it, he could be the king for that long? So the idea is actually that all of it was worth it because even if someone rules who's completely dharmic, who's completely righteous, if they rule even for one day, then anyone under the kingdom, anyone under the jurisdiction, anyone that comes in contact with them can attain perfection in that one day. But if unrighteous leaders are there for even one day, then so many people can be led astray. So all of it was worth it because then Yudhisthira Maharaj, ultimately, he could then establish everything that was needed for prosperity, for peace, for stability, all of these aspects, which would then help someone to then become completely Krishna conscious. Then help someone actually take to it. So in one aspect, we see that actually here Prabhupada is saying that any great tribulation should be taken as the Lord's favor as well. And we see that in Prabhupada's life, isn't it? Like, as soon as something unfavorable happened to him, something that looked unfavorable anyway, he would always say that famous verse from the 10th canto, Yashyaham Manugrinan Mi, Harishyeta Danam Shane. So he's saying this verse that Krishna explains that to those that I give my special favor, I strip everything from them. He takes their money, he takes their family, he takes everything from them. So then they're only left with him, basically. But here we see that actually there's two sides to this, that this is for a devotee that has special favor. This is for a devotee who's of a high caliber. Then only Krishna will take it off them. Whereas someone who's a materialist, for example, that's getting karma that might not be so favorable, that's just an aspect of karma. That's just material law. It's not Krishna that's acting there. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was famously saying that actually, if someone just has suffering, if someone just has disease and poverty, all these kind of aspects, it won't lead to them being Krishna conscious. You know, suffering doesn't automatically lead to Krishna consciousness. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was saying, if that was the case, then you would go to any hospital and you'll see fully Krishna conscious people there. But all you see is atheists and agnostics, because they take it the other way. But we see in Krishna we see in Srila Prabhupada that he was seeing Krishna everywhere. He was seeing Krishna in all situations, his hand in all situations, because he was always thinking, what is Krishna trying to show me now? How am I going to serve him in this situation? We see that through all the characters in the Mahabharata, that they were also showing that. And through this, through coming in contact with this scripture, we're ultimately able to actually think about the dual sides of this world, things that are dharmic and things that are adharmic. But it's not always so clear-cut, because Krishna twists it up. He makes something that looks adharmic, dharmic. And he makes something that looks very dharmic, like truthfulness, and he twists it and puts an adharmic kind of twist on it. So the idea being that as soon as something is questionable, then automatically we have to actually ask the devotees. Automatically we have to think the context, what Krishna is trying to show. And only then will we be able to actually make sense of it. Many times, like even at the start of Yudhisthira Maharaj's life, there's a point where he sees his own mother Kunti, and she, you know, she's got a very young and very like beautiful looks. So then he even sees his own mother, and he gets slightly attracted, as it's described, and therefore he doesn't know what to do. He's thinking this is adharmic, this is a bad, you know, desire to have. And therefore, he then approaches Krishna immediately. And he says, you know, this is what happened. Like, what should I do? And Krishna just says, tolerate it. Don't worry. Tolerate it. It will go. So often this happens to us as well, isn't it? Like, we're trying to live a Krishna-conscious life, and then, like, a test comes up. Something that feels adharmic. Something that we feel like, oh, I'm a demon now. Like, this is it. Krishna-consciousness over. I can't go to the temple ever again. But actually, you'll see the biggest thing that's needed is that when we have the chance to have association with devotees, we be honest with them and we actually reveal ourselves completely to them. And then you'll see that so much progression can happen. Just how Yudhisthira Maharaj, Krishna just said tolerate to him. Like, it's a simple thing, tolerate. But alongside of what Krishna's saying, he's given the empowerment by which to follow it as well. And therefore, when a devotee says something to us, it's also giving us the empowerment that actually how to follow it, how to make it work, how to show the example for others as well, and how to overcome all of this. And therefore, if someone doesn't actually vent it out to someone, you'll see that they'll suppress it, and they may end up doing something worse than that original adharmic desire that they had. But if they vent it to someone, they'll get the knowledge by how to actually deal with it properly, by how which to personify righteousness and real Krishna consciousness and progress onwards. So this verse, like when I was actually reading it, I'll just read the last part. So Bhishma Dev is saying that all of this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now appointed administrative head, and my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. So when I first read this, I just thought, imagine, like, you look at Srila Prabhupada, and it's literally like he's saying this to you, isn't it? These are like the words that you can hear that Prabhupada would say to you, that so many people in this world endlessly going around, they don't know what's going on in life, they don't know what to do, they have no real shelter. So you know, as whatever mercy you have, whatever ability to serve we have, also help these helpless people. Whatever you have, we can give it to them. And so, there was once, once I was serving my spiritual master in Radhadesh, and at the end of traveling with him, then this one family, they donated loads and loads of boga, all these nuts, almonds, dates, dry fruit, all these kind of stuff. Enough for to fit all of this, basically. And so at the end of it, he then said to me, okay, offer it. He's got a small Giriraj deity. So he said, please offer it to them. He said, offer everything, and then it will all be maha. So anyway, from my Indian background, so what we do is usually we take a little scoop of everything. You know, for practicalities, you place that in front of the deity, and then you just kind of merge it back in and then say it's all spiritualized. So anyway, I did that, and then Maharaj came back in the room. He said, did you offer it all? I said, yeah, I offered it all. He said, all of it? I said, yeah, I offered it all. He goes, how did you offer it? So I said, yeah, I took a little bit, offered it, brought it back. And then he said to me, oh, you've ruined it. You've ruined it all. I was like, oh my God, what did I do? And then he said, I asked you to offer it all, and you couldn't just follow that. You just had, you know, you took a little bit. And then he said, you know what your problem is? And then I thought at that point, oh my God, don't say it now. There's other devotees in the room. All of these kind of things are going through my head. So then anyway, there was a moment of silence. And then he said to me, your problem is that you're not thinking how to give the maximum mercy to everyone. You're not thinking how to give the most mercy to everyone. And then anyway, he took a scoop of the maha and then gave it out to everyone. So he saved the day. But yeah, when I was reading this verse, I was thinking, actually, this is Prabhupada saying to us, you've got something. You know, devotees have been given your way by Krishna. You've got these scriptures, you've got the Mahabharata, you've got all these great fortunes to learn from. And now at this point, you're at a unique opportunity where you see people around you that are helpless, you see people that need this as well, give it to them. In whatever way you can, think about how to give it to them. And for your own strength, you can counsel devotees. For your own strength, I'll arrange everything. But now also put yourself on the line and give it to others as well. And so we see Yudhishthira Maharaj, without hesitation, he then takes it up. He then takes it up. And he also follows Bhishma Dev's line that he doesn't want any fame. So he allows even Dhritarashtra to sit on the throne for 18 years, whilst he himself is doing all the work. He's doing everything, and imagine the whole poster, the whole glory is going to Dhritarashtra at that point. So there's these are great personalities. We can learn a lot from them, a lot about how to live our lives, how to perfect our lives, and how to progress. So these are just a few thoughts I thought to share with you. Thank you for tolerating. If there's any questions, queries, corrections.